The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And I think that's all the time we have in this segment. There's so many things to get to before I can even start talking sports. First is time Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. John Thompson passed today at the age of 78. And a lot has been said about him on First Take. Michael Wilbon came on, who had a personal relationship with the Hoyas coach for many years and one of the all-time great college basketball coaches. Stephen A. knew him a bit. I had spoken to him, but not interacted with him on a personal level like that. So for me, it wasn't like a personal passing, as it is for some of my colleagues in the business. But it's more like the kind of passing, like a demarcation of time kind of passing, which is a lot of what sports is about. You know, you feel nostalgic or sentimental about, or just emotionally charged when you hear news about certain sports figures or figures in the sports world. And it really has a lot to do, I think, with the way we experience our own lives and what we were doing in that moment in our lives. When I was a kid, John Thompson and Georgetown was on top of the world, you know, with Patrick Ewing. And as a Knicks fan, of course, eventually Patrick Ewing becomes a Knicks. So you even get, but even, you know, on when he was on Georgetown, he was supposed to be Patrick Ewing originally, like the next Bill Russell. And then it turned out he had a lot of offense, and then he hurt his knee early in his career. So he only turned out to be a Hall of Fame center. But, you know, those Georgetown Hoyas, even though they were upset that one year, they also won the title, were in the Big East, the team that I always thought of as the class of the conference. And the Big East was where college basketball was at least if you grew up in New York and as a St. John's fan. At any rate, that's what it felt like to me. I know a lot has been said about the stances he took and what it meant in terms of the kind of at least feeling of social progress that he was a black coach who was the first to do things, win a national title and spoke his mind and all of that. And those are all important things. But for me as a fan, he was just a giant of the sports world from my childhood. You know, when I was, Chris Mullen was the guy for St. John's and Patrick Ewing was the guy for Georgetown and Villanova scored the upset. Like that whole era when kids went all 4 years, Molly Caramon, First Take, mentioned it a bunch of times, 97% graduated. John Thompson ran a program where 97% of the kids graduated. I mean, it was a different time then, but even in any time, that's a staggeringly high number. What's the average number of college graduates as a percentage, period, let alone student athletes, let alone on that level and the level Georgetown was playing basketball? But at any rate, for me, it wasn't about the way I experienced hearing that John Thompson passed today was not about me contextualizing where he fits in history on or off the field of play. It was just about like, damn, he was a titan of the sports world when I was a kid and he's gone. Makes me feel old. But I don't know how much more I have to add to it personally, other than a story which I also told on First Take today. It was a high school All-American game, the McDonald's High School All-American game. LeBron James' last amateur game, as it turned out, or last game before he went into the NBA draft. And he actually lost that game, but, you know, backstage, as it were, I see, you know, in the media area, I see John Thompson, and he's this larger-than-life figure in my own imagination. I was hosting Around the Horn at the time, and, you know, he's big, and he had a big voice, and he's like an intimidating guy, but like friendly, nice guy, but like just, you know, and he has this big reputation, but I went right up to him, and I wanted to talk to him about LeBron James. I was excited. And LeBron, I think, had just signed like a $100 million Nike deal. And he hadn't played a professional game yet. And Thompson said, well, if LeBron signed for $100 million, Kobe's going to need $200 million. Why is that? Because Kobe already earned it. Kobe's already where LeBron needs to be. And Wilbon told me on the air today, that's very much how John Thompson thought about things. You know, the guys who earned it were the guys he was interested in. At any rate, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. This is Jim Calhoun, former UConn head coach, of course, and champion, talking about John Thompson.
A force of nature. John Thompson is one of the brightest men I ever met. I first met him trying out for the Celtics down in Camp Millbrook in Marshfield, Mass. They told me I had a room over room, I think 16, but it was not important. I went in there, I saw this enormous figure in the door. It was my meeting with first meeting with John. He was with the Celtics at the time, and from that point on, we became very good friends, and I had incredible respect for John's ability to coach, certainly, but John did a lot more than that. John took some of the views which today I'm sure would be praised for being incredibly courageous, and et cetera. John took those long before anybody ever did. John took stances that were very difficult to help others, to help his community, to help his kids.
That was Jim Calhoun talking to Key and Jay Will and Zubin in the morning, of course, here on ESPN Radio. And that was, by the way, Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. I want to move on from this topic now. There's a lot to get to. I want to pay my respects to John Thompson, but I also want to talk about what I just witnessed on the court over the weekend. I told everybody that Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell, in a certain way, are the only real rivalry right now in the NBA. There have been very few rivalries like this, actually. I mean, Bird and Magic, it's in its own category, of course. But and Vince Carter was talking about him and AI in 2000, 2002, you know, in the early 2000s, going at it in a first-round series. But this? When was the last time there was a game seven in the first round you anticipated like this, or even a deciding game in the first round? Because it used to be best of five. But a game seven like this? Two evenly matched teams? If Kawhi and LeBron meet in these playoffs, okay, we can talk. But there's no guarantee they will. And when last time they linked up in the finals and Kawhi got finals MVP, LeBron had a lot more responsibility on his team than Kawhi had on his, unless, of course, you consider that Kawhi had to guard LeBron, and there's no defensive job like that back then in the NBA. But it wasn't the same as, like, the Kawhi from last year's Toronto's team. And if these two link up this year, fine. But they haven't yet. When was the last time two guys who essentially did the same thing for their teams on evenly matched teams, especially as they're still ascending, 22 and 23 years old, elevated their games before our very eyes? Like, the whole question to me in the playoffs for really good teams is, do they have the best player on a championship team level guy? Like, can Tatum be that for the Celtics? It's an open question still. Maybe eventually, but can he do it right now? And Donovan Mitchell look like, maybe can he? And then the way he's playing here, like early on, yeah, Donovan Mitchell looks like he could be the best player on a championship team right now. Could Jamal Murray meet that standard? He met it and passed it. And then Donovan Mitchell raised his game, and then Jamal Murray. And I remember coming into this series thinking Jokic is clearly the best player on the team. If Jamal Murray, I know eventually he'll be really, really good. He's very good right now. Maybe eventually he'll be great. We'll see. But right now, they don't have that guy. And maybe if Donovan Mitchell was on Denver, then I'd feel differently. Because I think he has it in him maybe right now. A little bit older than Jamal Murray. A little bit more of an explosive scorer, I felt, so far in their young careers. Nope, Jamal Murray right now is the best player on Denver. And Jokic is a near MVP caliber player. That gives them two. When we talk about the tag teams in the NBA right now, Kawhi and Paul George, and before Porzingis got hurt, Luka and Porzingis, and obviously LeBron and AD, and where does Harden, and when Westbrook is healthy, Harden and Westbrook, Jamal Murray, and the Joker right now. Right now. Like, if you're playing at a higher level than Jokic, you're an MVP caliber player. Because Jokic is the next thing to that. He's not a, you know, five-star MVP, four-star, all-star, three-star starter, two-star rotation piece, one-star replacement level. Jokic ain't five, but he ain't four either. He's like 4.5, 4.75 stars right there. Jamal Murray is a five-star plus right now. This guy has lost his mind. And Donovan Mitchell, Mitchell's with him every step of the way. It's insane what we're seeing from these two guys right now. This is a rivalry. Same function on the team, same, more or less same age. Seeing the new stand, like developing before our eyes, like exploding like supernovas really before our eyes. Can this guy eventually, no, all you got to do is play like this. Some of the greatest players who've ever lived have never reached the level these two are playing at right now. And they're doing it in the playoffs. They're doing it when you need them to do it most. This is amazing. So what else has been like this in the NBA? Where guys have come into the league around the same time, around the same job description, linked up in the playoffs at this early stage in their careers, and did something like this. I don't know. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, especially as it looked like, oh my God, what has Donovan Mitchell just done? Because Denver on paper looked better. I mean, maybe Gobert is the defensive equivalent of Jokic as an offensive player, but I think in our imaginations, or emotionally at least, we're more susceptible to just feeling that the offensive juggernaut is, you know, somehow better than the defensive juggernaut. It doesn't always work out that way, but that's how we kind of experience it. And so it's not like really in our minds, I think, at least not in mine, I was thinking Gobert is a kind of an equivalent to Jokic. Maybe he is. And, you know, and then Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, the way they were, the kind of strife in their relationship, the angst based on the COVID prank that before he knew how serious it was that Gobert played, and Mitchell was talking at him, and they're admitting their relationship isn't perfect, but it's a working relationship and all this. And you think, well, look, with all that, and Conley's been a disappointment, you look at Denver, they're a higher functioning team in terms of the chemistry. They have an MVP-level player, I mean, coming into the series, and Jokic, almost. They have a number two guy in Jamal Murray, who turned out to be the, you know, maybe they look like too much. Then the show Donovan Mitchell put on, you said, oh my God, he's just willing his team to victory. They were on the brink, they were on the verge of taking care of Denver way too easily. And Donovan Mitchell was the best player in the bubble. Yes, that includes Doncic and everybody, Kawhi and LeBron and everybody. Donovan Mitchell was the best player in the bubble. Certainly the best offensive player in the bubble. By the way, clearly, he was clearly the best offensive player in the bubble. I mean, Devin Booker before the playoffs, but I mean, you got to extend it to the playoffs. In the bubble during the playoffs, let me put it that way. Anyway, and then for Jamal Murray to say, nope, not so fast. And raise his level even above Mitchell's to tie this thing up. I can't believe how good this Game 7 is. It's ridiculous. But when has there ever been anything like this? I'm not calling them the two best players of all time. I'm not saying it's the greatest rivalry in NBA history. I mean, it is a pure rivalry right now in a way that none other is in the league. Nick in Laguna Beach, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, I think Jamal just turned the Joker into Vlade Divac. I mean, if this guy brings it, like, and he pulls this off, unbelievable. But Mitchell's my guy. I think Mitchell is slightly better.
I agree at this moment, right, but I agree, but like, we can't prove that right now. That's just a gut feeling. Right now, that's not a provable thing.
No, it's not a provable thing. I'm just putting my opinion out there.
Yeah.
And my dad, rest his soul, my dad would say, you know, Nick, he grew up with DiMaggio in the Bronx, and he said, I never thought there'd be any other players, and they always come along. And look at the league right now. Look at the league right now.
Yeah.
That game Luka put up with that exclamation point winner, best playoff game I've ever seen anyone play since Magic in 1980. I'm slightly older than you, but I remember that.
Yeah, well, listen, your dad said he grew up with DiMaggio, and when are you going to find another Joe DiMaggio, right, who really, in a way, replaced Babe Ruth, at least in the emotions of Yankees fans. And in his last season, the Yankees come up with Mickey Mantle in 1951. There's always the next guy. And this league right now is so filled with them. Now, listen, you have to adjust in your own mind the numbers you're seeing, because they're not, this is not like a standard issue NBA era. Because of the analytics, everyone's playing hyper-efficient basketball, and as high-usage players are going to put up like cartoon numbers, like Wilt and Elgin and Oscar Robertson did in 60, 61 or 61, 62, I always forget, but in the early 1960s. You know, when everyone was averaging ridiculous numbers. If you adjust for era, they're not the same kind of things. If you adjust these numbers into 1980s numbers, early 90s numbers, they're not going to be 50 and 40 points. In other words, these are not two of the best players of all time, but they're all-time special players right now. For two guys their age to be going at it like this on this level in this kind of series in the playoffs is all-time special. And when you look around the league, how it's populated with these young stars, yeah, your dad was right. There's always the next guy. Michael in Michigan. Now, well, hold on with Michael in Michigan. He wants to talk about Ben Wallace. Where did that come from? All right, you know what? Just for kicks. Go ahead, Michael in Michigan. Why do you want to talk about Ben Wallace right now?
Well, sorry to switch the topic, Max, but I just was wondering if you think Ben Wallace deserves to be in the Hall of Fame or not. I got a lot of people telling me I'm crazy for thinking that.
Well, he's a great defensive player and certainly an amazing rebounder. I remember arguing with Mark Cuban because when he was a guest panelist on Around the Horn and I was the host, and he was saying that Ben Wallace will never win a championship because he can't hit free throws. Like, you know, how'd Bill Russell shoot free throws? How'd Tim Duncan shoot three free throws? They won a championship with Ben Wallace. Against the Lakers, they won a championship with Ben Wallace. I don't have his numbers in front of me. Off the top of my head, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. He was a force for several years, for sure, and a great player for a short time, and a good player for a while. I don't know about a Hall of Famer. Robert in Kentucky, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Go ahead, Robert.
The one thing you're forgetting about is Mitchell and Murray. They were against each other in college as well, going to Kentucky and going to Louisville.
Yep. Right. This is a rivalry. It's a real rivalry. This is, like, by the way, it's a great, I think Robert just dropped, but that's a great point. Like Magic and Bird, the rivalry started in college. You know, the highest watched ever championship game at the time. And then they continued it in the pros. You're right. It goes back to their collegiate days, and it's continuing now. But like, it's one thing to just to have two great players link up, but at the similar time in their careers, similar function on the team, they don't really guard each other. But neither did Magic and Bird a lot. But they serve the same function. They're around the same age. They have similar games in certain respects, and they're both putting up one night after another, but more than all of that, they're elevating each other. Mitchell's like, yeah, this is my best, and Murray's best, not quite good enough. And Jamal Murray's like, oh, I got to rise up to that level? Okay. And he not only sees Donovan Mitchell, he raises him. And now for game seven, what's Donovan Mitchell going to do? I mean, this is unbelievable. Larry Merchant, my predecessor at HBO Boxing, I used to do HBO Boxing before they stopped doing boxing, I took over Larry's job. And Larry Merchant had a lot of great phrases, but one of them was when he talked about Ali and Frazier, was they were fighting for the heavyweight championship of each other. Like the second Ali-Frazier fight, there wasn't the title on the line. It was a regional title, like NABF, North American Boxing Federation, not a world title, because Frazier just been knocked out by Foreman. But it didn't matter. They were fighting for the heavyweight championship of each other. And by the way, eventually Jackie Frazier and Layla Ali fought. And Layla was a heavy favorite. Jackie, close, tough fight, 10 rounds. You see Ali and Frazier, that's like rival clans, the Hatfields and the McCoys. Like, they're not playing games. They're fighting for the championship of each other. And that's the feel. I know it's a team sport. It doesn't boil down quite the same way as boxing. But Denver and Utah are evenly matched, as we can see. And their two best players are evenly matched. And they are fighting for the first round championship of each other. but they sure look like championship players to me. David in Orlando, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, huge Laker fan. Well, this is what my question is. I heard Dwight Howard didn't leave the meeting when they had that big meeting Wednesday. Do you think there's anything going on with Dwight Howard? Because I hear he's not really the most likable person to get along with.
I could tell you this about Dwight Howard. I've interacted with Dwight Howard before when he was on the Lakers originally, and he was fine. He never felt comfortable in his own skin to me. He felt like, I quote a friend of mine a bunch of times, he used this to describe A-Rod, I think it can, as a player, he's a great analyst, it could describe Cam Newton, however great the player, they're so uncomfortable in their skin that when you watch them and listen to them talk, you feel uncomfortable in yours. It's like awkward. Dwight gave me a bit of that feeling. And you also couldn't help but to notice when he came out into the press room, all the other players left. When he left, they all came in. And I also know he has some wacky ideas like about vaccinations and stuff. Is it hard for me to believe that he's creating kind of awkward feelings with the players around him? No, it's not hard for me to believe, but I'll say this. He's played some great basketball this year for the Lakers. What more could you ask? This is the best version of what the Lakers could have hoped for when they signed Dwight Howard. The best version. He and JaVale McGee both have been excellent contributors to this Lakers team. Much more than could reasonably expect. And if the Lakers do win the whole thing, it will be in no small part because of the defense at the five that Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee have given them. Leonard Fournette is not only out of a job, they couldn't get a 6th-round pick for this dude. Released. Is there a team that needs him? Warren Sharp will tell us coming up. Oh, protect your neck. See, this was the real first taste of Wu-Tang. This came out, people lost their minds. What was this? I don't know, 91 maybe? You know, I always thought about this before I get to sports in a second. That took a lot for Ghostface to cover his face in that video. And who knows why he really had to cover his face. Maybe he'll call in and let me know. But you don't know what kind of level of success you're going to have. This could be your big shot, right, to be seen. To cover your face in the video? Pretty good. As I said, I don't know if he had ulterior motives, but I got to get Ghost on the show. I talk a lot about Ghost, and I never had him on the show. Saw Raekwon a couple months ago. Rode by, said what's up. He said what's up to me. He recognized me. I said, oh, my God, it's Raekwon. Went over using a Jeep downtown. Yeah, I'm a big Wu-Tang fan, as you can tell. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speaker. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. By the way, Raj, so you know, you write, The Max Kellerman is presented by Progressive Insurance. There's no show there. I add it every time because I'm quick on my feet.
It's like you're in third person. You're talking in third person. You know, The Max Kellerman.
See how I cleverly understand there should be a show there? Just inferred from the whole thing. Reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Leonard Fournette released. They try to trade the guy. First, he wants big money. He ain't going to get big money. Then they look to trade him. They can't even find any takers. Boy, the trade market, there's nothing like that to let you know how the league sees what your value really is. I mean, you could prove him wrong. Carmelo proved people like me wrong in Portland. But Warren Sharp, see, whenever I want to know, like, wait, what's really going on? Because who knows? There's so many positions in football, and you see a guy play, but you're not watching coaches film, just breaking down every single play of his in every game. So you remember someone, like, Earl Thomas, we were talking about the other week. I think Earl Thomas is still pretty good. I think so, but I wanted Warren Sharp to come on and tell me, is he actually still good? And he joins us now on the Pennzoil Shell Performance Line. Warren,
Max.
There he is.
I think Dave Caldwell and the Jacksonville Jaguars, that is a team that's been a show since he's been in charge starting in 2013.
Okay, why?
Just terrible draft picks, terrible coaching hires, just a bad way of running a team. And we've seen, as a result, this team, look, it is pretty remarkable to have as much high draft capital as this team has had. They had top five picks in six straight years. That means they've been terrible and they've been losing a lot of games. And so the NFL tries to make them better by giving them high draft picks. And just look at how they've burned through these guys. They cut Leonard Fournette today. Prior to that, they had Jalen Ramsey, one of the few good guys they drafted, but they traded him away. They traded away Dante Fowler. They cut Blake Bortles. And I'm not going to go back further in the years, but as we walk through their draft history, this is a team that has been terrible at evaluating talent and trying to build a franchise. And now there's all this discussion, well, they're going to blow it up this year. I can't wait to see how they rebuild. And I'm thinking to myself, you have the same people in charge of rebuilding. Do we really think this is going to go any better? I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. Like 3 or 4 years ago, you looked at Jacksonville and some trades they made and some draft picks they had, and you said, ooh, they got a lot of talent on their defense. Maybe in a year or two, and it never happened. So do you find, because you have sharp analytics, by the way, how should I introduce you, Warren? I always say sharp analytics. I follow you on Twitter and everything, but I'm sure you have something you'd like to plug when you come on.
Well, sharpfootballanalysis.com is the website, so that's where all my information is up at, and that's what I love to plug.
So when you look around the league, no one gets punished quite like the dumb. You know, like especially in business, if people are resistant to change and they insist on doing it by their gut, unless they have some incredible gut. I mean, there are some organizations I can think of throughout the history of sports who may have not been hostile to analytics, but not have just adopted it as quickly as other teams, but had very, very good scouts and evaluators and did it old school and were still able to succeed for a while. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but you better be damn good at that if you're going to be hostile to analytics. Are the Jags hostile to analytics?
Oh, yes. They are extremely hostile. Look no further than one of the most basic statistics that we know improves a passing game and an offense in general, and that's play action. When a quarterback drops back and fakes the ball into the belly of the running back and then goes and throws it, they have a much higher success rate, higher efficiency, higher yards per attempt, all the efficiency metrics in general, doesn't matter which one you want to choose, perform better when that quarterback is utilizing play action. And this is not an advent that was just uncovered in the 2019 season. This has been going on for several years. We've been able to measure it. And what we saw last season is a perfect example. You could not have more of two diametric opposite types of players between your quarterback and your running back. You have the number four overall draft pick running back in terms of Leonard Fournette. Everybody knows this team wants to run the football. Everybody knows this team has a really good running back. And then you have a quarterback who you didn't even want to play Gardner Minshew. You only were playing him because Nick Foles got hurt. You have a sixth round rookie quarterback out there as your passer. Would you not want to make life easier on your quarterback by pretending that the running back is going to get the ball? The entire defense already believes the running back is going to get the ball on each snap, and then you pull it out and you let Gardner Minshew throw it? Absolutely. And their efficiency when Gardner Minshew was utilizing play action was extremely solid. It was actually the number one biggest improvement in passer rating and success rate, and the third biggest in yards per attempt of any team in the NFL, play action versus not using play action. They had one of the biggest improvements in the NFL, which makes sense because you got the entire defense is going to bite on that. You know how often they used it? The third least often of any team in the NFL. They hardly used it at all. And all these other efficiency metrics and other things that teams could utilize go that same exact way, where this is not a team that's looking at analytics to try to help actually improve their decision making on the field, and clearly does not appear that they're utilizing analytics to help their front office make decisions from a personnel perspective either.
All right, Warren, I'm taking a minute or two out of the next segment because I want to keep you for a second to talk Fournette. Is it an issue of he has been overused and is in decline? Is it an issue of teams not properly evaluating what he might still be able to do? Do you think he's looking for too much money to get teams interested? Or do you think he was never as good as maybe his draft status suggested he might be? What is going on with Fournette?
I think it's a little bit of all of the above. First of all, backs nowadays, if you're going to go after a really good back, you need him to be somewhat efficient or not at least a detriment in the passing game. You can't just stick a guy on the field and defenses know you're going to run the football. He's one of the worst pass-catching backs in the NFL, second worst success rate last season, one of the second worst average yards per attempt when they threw him the football. So he's a very poor producer in the receiving game, and then he doesn't break as many tackles anymore. He's not explosive. If you look at what they were doing in terms of giving him the ball on early downs and asking him to perform, even in the first half of games, he was the worst in the NFL in terms of his yards per carry, dead last at 2.7. His successful play rate, 25% of his carries were successful, dead last. So he can't get the yards on early downs at the beginning of games. He can't be trusted as a receiving back in the backfield on third downs or in the second half of games that you're trying to get into. So therefore, it's just a fact of the matter of his ceiling is not good and his floor is completely unknown. We don't know how bad he's going to get. We don't know if he's going to get injured, but he's really not good. And so why would you want to use anything of value to try to acquire him? And that's why the GM and the head coach had a quote earlier today. We tried to trade him for a fourth round, a fifth round, a sixth round pick. Nobody wanted to give us anything for Leonard Fournette because those other teams, I guess, realized that he's actually not going to help the team that much such that they should give up a draft pick for him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you don't have a versatile skill set, as they say, then some of your other talents better be pitched really high, because if they're just high enough and they start to erode a little bit, you don't have other things to fall back on, you wind up getting released. I mean, the average NFL career is, you know, to paraphrase Hobbs, nasty, brutish, and short. And that may be the case with Leonard Fournette, unfortunately for him. Nice guy. Had him on First Take, like talking to him, but not in a good position right now. The great Warren Sharp, ladies and gentlemen. SharpFootballAnalysis.com. Check him out. This guy knows what he's talking about. Really appreciate it, as always, Warren. Thanks for coming on. See this song on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Party and BS, let's call it. I heard this song for the first time during the credits of Who's the Man. I went to see Who's the Man when it came out in the movie theater. And I heard this song during the credits, and I didn't know who Biggie Smalls was. And I swear to you, I thought it was KRS-One, and I thought, like, I think Kool G Rap might be writing KRS-One's lyrics now. And it was Biggie Smalls. Reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. It's 888-729-3776. Because if G Rap would write lyrics for Biggie Smalls, that'd be the best rapper ever. Sorry, G Rap would write lyrics for KRS-One. That would be... And that's what Biggie Smalls was. I guess you have to call Jay-Z the greatest of all time now. The length of his career has just been too much. And Biggie had such a short prime. But if you just talk peak value, like in sports, like Sandy Koufax, that's Biggie Smalls. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com. Today. Let's play no doubt. Gotta get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think of the
No Doubt.
Tease this with it, and it was a wonderful tease, but yes. Can a team count on your guy, Porzingis? Is this the fourth straight year he hasn't finished the season?
No, you can't count on his health. You can't count on his health. Nah, son. Isn't that what we say? Nah, son. You can't count on his health. First of all, he's a giant. When you're 7'3", you're a giant. Your body, the force that you're putting on your joints and everything is different. The levers are longer. There's more pressure brought to bear, and I don't think it's just proportional. Like, well, your ligaments and everything. No, it's putting more pressure, I think, than the human body is built for in certain areas. And so, you know, a lot of times these giants can't get through the kind of you need to see through attrition who's left standing after 5, 6, 7 years. And I hope Porzingis is, because if he's healthy, the Mavericks will win a championship. What's next?
All right. Quick one. Has Carmelo earned another year in the NBA?
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Carmelo played at the level of a good starting caliber forward in the NBA on a good team. That is a hell of a player, period. But particularly in his 17th season, this Carmelo absolutely should have a starter's job next year in the NBA. No doubt.